Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. Today's episode is a really important one because we're talking about something that I see all the time but isn't spoken about as much as we think it should be. And that's how menopause, perimenopause impacts work and career in terms of things like confidence, changes in cognition, clarity, ability to cope. Women will say things like they just don't feel like themselves anymore. They can't think clearly. Their brain might feel slower. They're more anxious, more overwhelmed, and as a result of that, we can start to feel loss of confidence. And they don't know why this is happening, so it can feel really unsettling. And I've experienced this as well myself, so we can talk about that as we go through the episode. But on the outside, we're still showing up, we're still doing the job, we're still running the business. Everything seems pretty normal from the outside, but on the inside, things can be feeling very different. And for those of us, for example, who are maybe self-employed, running our own businesses or working for smaller companies where there's no HR or no particular support structure and kind of no space to talk, it can feel lonely, it can feel scary. And even for those of us in the workplace with HR, you know, it may still feel quite isolating and challenging. So in this episode today, we have a wonderful guest where we're going to explore the mental and emotional side of perimenopause and menopause through a workplace lens. We'll talk about what's happening, why it feels so challenging, and how we can support ourselves, but more importantly, without over-medicalizing, but also without minimizing. You know, we hear all the time, oh, it's just menopause, it's just menopause. So we'll talk about this a lot more. So I'm really pleased and excited to be joined by Victoria, who brings such a valuable perspective to this conversation. Victoria is a workplace wellbeing specialist who's co-founder of a company called MenoMise after this realization that even with their backgrounds in mental health, neither of them were prepared for how profoundly perimenopause, menopause could affect the mind. So together they founded MenoMise, which delivers free, fully funded training that helps women understand what's happening to their minds and to feel calm, confident and capable again. So welcome, Victoria. I'm really pleased that you're here.
Thank you, Francesca. It's great to be here.
So I'd love to start by giving my listeners a bit of context. So would you mind just sharing a little bit about your background and the work that you do and what sort of brought you to this work?
Yeah, sure. So I've got quite a varied background when it comes to my career. I used to be in the creative world and then I went into mental health and I ran a mental health charity for a while. And I trained to be a psychotherapist and I'm also a mindfulness instructor. And I got into the whole world of well-being and mental health because of my own quite profound difficulties with my own mental health, with depression and anxiety in my teens and 20s and 30s. Really, it's been an ongoing thing that I've had to manage. And then I founded my own company, Minds That Work, that was specific for the workplace around mental health and leadership training. I've been doing that for 9 years. So I started doing that when I was in my early 40s and it was all great. It was a challenge to start with, you know, like start setting up a businesses, but I was really excited by it and I was banging loads of stuff out and had lots of clients and doing all the comms and all that kind of stuff and really loving it. And then about 18 months, 2 years ago, started to notice that things were dropping a bit in terms of my focus, in terms of my concentration, my ability to pick up the phone and talk to clients, all those sorts of things, because of primarily levels of anxiety that were really spiking. And I thought that was just another episode or blip, if you like, with my mental health. And but it's been really quite profound. And but before that happened, actually, I went to my GP about it, thinking that maybe I needed to go back on antidepressants and things like that, but she mentioned perimenopause. So at that time I was about 47 46 maybe, and it hadn't actually occurred to me at all. So shockingly.
I was going to ask you, you weren't aware of,
no,
of perimenopause at the time?
Well, I was aware of it, but because obviously this, like when I do my trainings, it's a little side thing that we mention about menopause in the workplace, but it's not really, you kind of just go, oh yeah, menopause, yeah. You kind of think, I mean, maybe my mum going through menopause, but I was very, very young, obviously like 15 or something. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, that's what happens to women, you know, in their late 50s, 60s or whatever. And it's really, it just wasn't this, I didn't have the knowledge, which is pretty shocking. And I'm actually quite angry about it as well, that I didn't have, you know, that kind of knowledge. So, yeah, so I spoke to my GP and I was really lucky that she happened to be the women's health representative of that surgery. I know, extremely lucky, because we've had all sorts of stories, really upsetting stories from women on our courses about how they've been ghosted and you know, the medical profession just hasn't believed them, or they said they've been too young, and none of this is the case at all. It's just a real lack of knowledge. That kind of started me off on this path of educating myself on perimenopause. I mean, I'd only heard of the word menopause then. I hadn't even really heard of perimenopause. What's that? Yeah.
Menopause is after I've stopped having my periods.
Exactly.
And I'm nowhere near there. So how can this have anything to do with that?
Exactly. And menopause is actually only one day.
Yes.
And we can't quantify that until 12 months after our last bleed, which I think can be quite enlightening for a lot of women. It is mainly the perimenopause that we talk about. And then, of course, there's postmenopause, and that can also have its challenges. But menopause itself is just one day.
It's just a point in time. Post. And the storminess is very much in that perimenopause, though you were lucky. Just to go back to that, did where you had gone in saying you thought potentially you need antidepressants again, did your doctor then say, actually, let's try something else because it could be?
So I didn't want to go on antidepressants again. But I did explain to her how I just wasn't functioning like I would want to. And it seemed to be a sudden decline. So I talked about my mental health and my history and stuff. And then she mentioned perimenopause. I'd also been having some kind of unusual bleeding, but not dramatically different. So a lot of women do experience quite profound changes in their bleed, like heavier or irregular. I was getting more painful periods, but they were still really regular, quite heavy, but I've always been heavy. So for me, it was the pain that was more profound. Yeah. So for me, it's definitely been the mental health side of perimenopause that has affected me more than anything. So for some women, it's not. For some women, it's more the physical. But for me, it's definitely been the mental health bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely what's missing from the conversation. Obviously, my listeners we talk a lot about the mental health side of it, in terms of anxiety and changes in cognition, changes in confidence. We do talk about that, but I still think it is a missing piece of the sort of overall like mainstream conversation. Definitely. The physical side things, you know, the hot flushes, the aches and pains, headaches, all sorts of things like that, and changes to your periods, etc. But really that the mental health side isn't talked about enough, and particularly in the workplace, and how that affects us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was some research done by the UK Parliament Women and Equalities Committee, I think it's 2020 or 21, and they had some really good findings that over 50% of women experience an elevated level of anxiety, anger, mood swings, and also reporting low mood and depression. So the findings are that if you've had a history of mental health conditions like clinical depression, this can be elevated because of the hormonal changes. Yeah. But also hormonal changes can cause an elevation in symptoms that are similar to clinical depression and even clinical depression. So although we're saying in our little chat now, we're going to be talking about this and what we call a psychosocial. So it's about how it affects concentration and work and what we can do about that. And we're not going to over medicalize. There is definitely a case for medicalizing severe symptoms of poor mental health, where someone really should go and speak to a GP or another mental health professional.
Right.
Just to clarify that because it's really important. If it's really severe and really complex, and we've got lots of other things happening in our lives as well at this time, and then there might be a case for
getting professional support.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think it's being aware of the intensity, the severity,
exactly.
not downplaying it for yourself as well, and not just saying, "Oh, this is just menopause. This is just perimenopause. It's normal." I found out recently. Someone might say, "I found out recently that." Actually, it does cause changes to mood, particularly low mood depression. So therefore, this is all it is. Let's just get on with it. I think it's really, really very good point. Very important to know the intensity. Is it that point where you do need to have it medicalized?
Absolutely. And speak to a professional. Yeah,
for sure. And so your own personal experience after seeing that GP, did you then go away with some sort of tools that helped you? Or?
So obviously, because it was a GP, she really only spoke about HRT. So I did all my research around that. When it came to actual tools and to be able to cope with this high level of anxiety that I was suffering from, it's been a bit of a I don't want to use all the cliches like journey and roller coasters. It's been let's be honest, it's been a struggle and it's been a challenge. It really has. And there are times when I've wanted to think, well, actually, I can't run my business anymore. I can't do this. And because things that I used to do lots of meditation and do lots of yoga and stuff, and even sometimes even being able to get out to go and do those things has been a real challenge, or being able to connect with others to support me running my business has been a real challenge as well. Just to get enough energy, get enough focus, because I'm so tired from not sleeping. And then that whole kind of inner critic, I never used to be like this, I can't do, and all that stuff. It just, the catastrophizing has been immense. So I've had to create my own tools because there's not a lot out there. And there is no magic pill, It's like some things work for some women and not for others. And it depends on our personality and what resonates with us. So lots of different things I've had to experiment with.
Yeah, we are very different in terms of what we need. And I think there is, when we talk about tools, there are suggested tools out there. I mean, I recommend tools all the time. It's what I do. But it has to resonate with the person. If it isn't something that you want to do or even potentially need, or the way that it's done, it could, might need to be completely different from one person to the next. And we do have to find our own way.
Yeah.
But I do totally resonate with the catastrophizing. I think. Is that, I think, a cat?
Yes. So she, in the morning, she would either bring me in a vole or a dead mouse. Or she would just want loads of attention when I'm on a call, don't you?
But that's, having an animal is very calming, very regulating.
Sometimes she's been my saviour, particularly in the middle of the night when I'm waking up, with the heart pounding and the mind just going crazy, and not being able to self-regulate. So having something that works at that moment, giving her a little stroke can be really, really calming.
That'll be the oxytocin.
Exactly.
Brilliant. So I'm glad she's with you today. The call. I definitely resonate with the catastrophizing and the sort of worrying. You start to worry, am I actually capable of doing what I do? I work with clients one-to-one. Can I be trusted almost? We were talking offline earlier, weren't we, about things that are kind of funny, but actually they can also be quite destabilizing, quite worrying, like searching high and low in the kitchen for a particular utensil, which is what happened to me last week. and just, where is this thing? Getting my partner to help rip out all the cupboards for me because I needed to find this thing for my own sanity. And then I just thought after a while, I need to check the bin. I just have a funny idea that potentially I've just put this in the bin.
Yeah.
And there we were outside taking the bin apart with our gloves on, and it was there. This really important serving spoon that I need was in the bin. And I just, it was funny in the moment, but it's not funny because then I think, well, what, I don't remember doing that.
Yeah.
There's no need to put this spoon in the bin. It is not a spoon that should have gone in the bin.
Yeah, you know,
it was like I accidentally threw something away that I didn't think I needed anymore. It was like really destabilizing for me in that moment. I did laugh because of how we pulled everything apart, but it wasn't, it starts because it makes you think, well, does this reflect or on other things?
Yeah.
Does this then relate to the actual work I do, the advice I give, or, you know, anything that I'm trying to do? How am I trusting that I'm doing it properly if I don't even remember doing this? And I know, you know, someone will say, like I was saying to you, oh, you know, we all do things like that. And obviously people mean well, they're trying to make you feel better, but you know yourself. Mm-hmm. We all know ourselves. So I have a friend, for example, who has always done stuff like that her whole life. And she even said to me a few months back, she said, you must find this, the cognitive change side of perimenopause, really difficult. She said, I don't find it difficult because I've always been a bit, you know, not sure where I am from one minute to the next and losing things and, you know, running late. She said, but you've never, ever been that way. So she said, you must be finding it actually much harder because you're trying to reconcile this new way. And I said, yeah, I didn't actually think about it like that, but that's the truth. So when someone would say to me, oh, don't worry, we all might have done that. Anyone could have thrown a, I say, well, no, but I would never, I've never done things like that. It's only starting now.
Yeah. And it's a sudden, it's sudden, isn't it? Like, sudden. I guess as we do get older, yes, of course, our cognition isn't as strong as it was when we were in our late, you know, in our teens or 20s. Yeah. But I think with perimenopause, it's just a sudden change, isn't it? It's not like a decline that we're hitting in our 80s. It's something that's happening in our 40s when we should be in our prime. And and you know, like I can so relate to your story. I instead of putting some hot milk in to heat some milk in the microwave the other day when I make a coffee in the morning, I put my empty cup in the microwave, and then I was like going insane trying to find my cup for my coffee. I don't even remember doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. And it is that, it's like a balance between, is this perimenopause or is this me just being so full of life and so full of so many things that actually I'm being a bit mindless in that time. Overwhelmed. Yeah. And I think I think like it can potentially be both. And I think that overwhelmness is elevated during this time, isn't it? And I think like the thing that can really affect us more than anything, in my experience, is our personal response to things like losing that spoon in the bin or putting your cup in the microwave or forgetting people's names on a training or forgetting something when we're in a meeting. And I think our own stress response and the way we react to that part of ourselves that we think is lesser is one of the things that we need to manage, because we're our own worst enemies in a way.
Definitely. We make it, we perpetuate the stress.
Yes.
When we start then, as we said, catastrophizing.
Yes.
Oh, with me, I need to shut my business. I can't do this. Yes. I'm not clean up anymore. And that's the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or what are people thinking of me? You know, am I being judged? And I think there are ways to definitely manage that. Which I'm happy to share.
Yes. Okay.
So I think it starts with self-aware. It starts with knowledge and self-awareness, isn't it? It starts with educating ourselves as women as early as possible in life around how this can affect us and to believe that it's not all doom and gloom, because it's not. I think there is so much about menopause out there and perimenopause at the moment, and it's a lot of it's about struggle, a lot of it is about am I good enough and all of this stuff. So the one thing we have to think is this is a time for growth. This is a time for, we could call it post-traumatic growth, if you like. It's like going through a real challenging time and then gaining more insight and knowledge on into ourselves and working out exactly what it is that works for us and what we want in life and not putting up with so much shit maybe.
Yes, it's definitely, I say, I think I've done an episode before, it holds, perimenopause holds up a magnifying glass
yes,
to us.
Yes.
All the things that are out of alignment,
yes,
not working, that yes, we could have sort of masked before, but now there's this, it's like there's this big floodlight over our life that saying, showing all the little things that actually we don't want this anymore. We actually never wanted that, but we definitely don't want this anymore, and we can't take this anymore. And we also have that less tolerance for, you know, we talk about the less tolerance negatively, I think, in a way, you know, I'm losing tolerance for stress and so on. But actually, we're also losing, the other way to reframe that is that we're losing tolerance for BS.
Yes.
For things that aren't in alignment for us.
Yes.
Things aren't right. And whenever, things that aren't nourishing, people, relationships, whatever it might be. And actually,
so we're gaining happiness off the back of that.
Yeah, because as long as we take action on it.
As long as we take action. And that can be really challenging. And it's something that doesn't happen overnight. It's like it has. Yeah, we have to allow things to unfold and allow ourselves to see what is going to make us happy and all of those healthy decisions that we can make. And that is like, that's time. We need to give ourselves time for that.
Yeah, we plant the seed. I think it helps. It shines the magnifying glass, which then helps us to plant the seed to say, okay, maybe this isn't quite right. And then, like you said, take time.
Yeah.
Take time to, you know, don't just make these decisions overnight. Don't just change things overnight. Just take time then. And then in the right time, it all unfolds and you see certain things drop away. My friends and I, my sister and I, we talk about this all the time where we say, oh, I just don't allow that anymore. I don't allow that in anymore. And I never would have thought I'd be the person who could put that boundary up.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's like, okay, well, I plant the seed. Now I can slowly start to put these boundaries in place.
Yes. That's without it looking so important. Like
having this crazy crisis and everything. Overnight.
So for me, that's like, that's a really strong foundation that then we can wrap around the whole experience.
Yeah.
But we still have to cope with stuff in the moment, right? We still have to, like, we're talking about forgetting things or, you know, losing concentration or focus or confidence. So we still have to cope with all of that in a healthy way as well. And it would be it's so easy just to go for that extra glass of wine or to buy something online or to scroll social media or whatever. And you know, in my mind, they are coping strategies. They work in the moment, but they're not the wisest or most skillfulest coping strategies because they're not sustainable. And they can actually, all of those things I've just mentioned can really destabilize our mood even more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest things I think we can do when we are struggling a bit with all of this cognition and emotional destabilizing during perimenopause and really in our lives as a whole, because we all go through things from day one, right, that can be destabilizing, is to be aware of it and then to I've totally lost my train of thought. I had it all there and now it's just emptied itself.
This is what happens.
It's to have a sense. So, okay, so when things go awry, we then tend to feel shame. We tend to feel that something is wrong with us and that we're being judged and that that we're not good enough. So that real deep sense of emotional shame doesn't really get talked about much.
Yeah.
But shame is a real painful emotion and it affects everything that we do.
Mm.
And a good antidote to feeling ashamed is self-compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And self-compassion is also really misunderstood because it's something that we don't really cultivate in our lives at all. We think that self-compassion is simply being kind to ourselves and therefore we reach that for that extra glass of wine or and it's much, much deeper than that. So self-compassion is being really aware that we are struggling in that moment and to feel the difficulty, feel the anger, feel the shame, feel the not being confident, but not to get caught up in those so-called negative emotions, not to be too dramatic about it or catastrophizing about it. And so we can have a level of stability that it's okay that I'm experiencing all this difficulty, but actually I'm safe and I'm okay. So there's that element to self-compassion. The other element to self-compassion is common humanity. So I'm not the only one that's experiencing this. For me, that can be the most powerful thing, is I actually, I'm not the only one. This happens to like a billion women in the world every year who are going through perimenopause and all of these feelings of shame. And as, if we can embed that deep sense of common humanity, and then that can really soften the aloneness, the anger, the shame, all that kind of stuff. And then the other element to self-compassion is, oh my God.
But you can't remember it right
now. I remember. it's the practice of mindfulness. It's being aware of how we're responding. So it's seeing our own responses and our own behaviours. Like, am I overthinking this? Am I catastrophizing this? Am I giving myself a hard time? And meeting that with kindness, as if you would comfort a good friend who's struggling, or comfort a child who needs a hug or something like that. So it's common humanity. It's kindness from within, not external kindness, but internal kindness. And not getting caught up in the drama of the negativity. And all of those things together wrap around this beautiful sense of self-compassion. So there are practices that you can do for this, like mindfulness practices, meditation practices. And also bringing in a sense of gratitude as well. So being really a gentle gratitude for what we are able to do, and not framing ourselves as failure. Really hard to do as well. And all of these things are practices. Yes. I think that's one of the key things, is that it's a practice and it's an ongoing thing that we need to remind ourselves to do, so that it becomes almost habitual.
Yeah, because I think the word practice, it gets, we hear about it, but we don't actually realize what it means. Like meditation practice, we know that's what it's called, but we have to remember, literally, practice means literally practice. So we can do a meditation practice every day for 20 years. With every day for 20 years, it's a practice. It's always going to be perfect. But I love what you said about the self-compassion. I think it's almost like acceptance. It's acceptance that in this moment I have felt angry or really worried. I'm scared that I'm losing my mind. And that's okay that I feel this in this moment because of this thing that happened. It's potentially not the truth, but it's okay that I feel this way, and it's understandable that I feel this way. And that, you know, rather than trying to bat these things away or ignore them, I think that's...
Or beat ourselves up.
But when you talk about mindfulness, you know, meditation practices being helpful for that, do you feel that it should be specific guided meditations that talk about these sorts of things in the
I do. So I've had a really strong meditation practice for a number of years, like going on retreat and stuff like that, but you know, in all honesty, I do teach meditation and mindfulness. I talk about it, but my practice can really wax and wane because of the levels of anxiety that I've got. And sometimes doing a meditation isn't the right thing to do if you're feeling really anxious. Sometimes movement is just as powerful. Because if we're just sitting in the difficult emotion, it can become even more upsetting or more challenging to be with. So it may not always be the best thing to do at that time. So movement, getting out of the body, getting physical, whatever that means for can mean different things for different people. Going for a walk, going for a run, gentle stretching and everything in between is just as powerful, I think, as sitting in meditation. movement is a big one.
Yeah, I think movement is a big one. I think even if it is just a sort of 3 or 4 minutes, not even that, maybe 2 minutes of some, whatever the movement is, even if it's you're at home, you're working from home, or, you know, in a private space, and it's dancing or just anything at all, to sort of discharge, the word before, kind of discharging that negative emotion.
Yes.
And then maybe you would sit in a bit of mindfulness.
Yes. There's a really lovely meditation I guided, a body mind one, where we start off with some gentle movement, just like stretching. You can do it sitting in your chair at a desk, or, you know, just waiting for a bus, or, you know, whatever. And then it's really powerful that the body starts to engage, and you can really focus on the areas of the body that you're gently stretching. And then you're much more able to sit down and do a meditation with the eyes closed, and, you know, be that on the breath or be that guided. So I mean, this is the thing about yoga, isn't it? It's like movement, and then you do a lovely rest at the end. It's really powerful.
Structured that way. I remember when I first figured out that's what the yoga classes do, the way it's a meditation at the beginning, a bit of movement, warming it up, then you get this active part, and then you're, because I used to think, what's the point in the Shavasana at the end? And now I understand there's every point. Of course there is. So I think if we can adapt that to ourselves in those moments, that first of all, that compassion, it's fine, you know, it's okay that I feel these things. Mm-hmm. It's valid. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's millions of other women feeling exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't, when you look at somebody else, you don't see that from the outside. Something I've realized over the years recently is that whatever you see from the outside is nothing. It's not the truth. We never know what other people are dealing with behind that.
Yeah.
You know, not they're necessarily masking it intentionally, but we all have our own stuff. All of us. And that's going to be different depending on where we're at.
Definitely.
So we're not alone. And how does that translate into the workplace then? I mean, whether it's the office or a small company, or working from home, you know, whatever it might be.
So that's a really interesting area to talk about, because we know that 1 in 10 women are actually leaving the workplace due to menopause or perimenopause symptoms and not getting support and feeling like they can't work anymore, or unfortunately being managed out, like they've suddenly been high flying and they've always done a really great job, and now they're not performing like they used to when they were in their 20s or 30s, and, you know, they're not getting any support or understanding, and therefore they're being managed out very cruelly, which is, apart from being illegal, it's massively impactful in terms of someone's mental health and purpose and value. I think within organizations, the responsibility for, I mean, it's kind of like multifaceted, the responsibility, but managers play a massive role. Then managers need to get upskilled, they need to go on trainings, or, you know, whatever it is that is going to support them to up their knowledge around this, how it does affect women, and what kind of reasonable adjustments and support that women can use to then enable them to thrive and to be the great working talents. Because just because we experience all of these cognitive changes doesn't mean to say we can't work. We're still very capable, and a lot of women at our age are at the top of their game. And we've got all this top talent that's leaving. So it's just it's about understanding what women need, and that's obviously on an individual level as well. So it's not just a tick box and then everything's fine. It needs to be very personalised. And because that is also this legislation, I'll just mention it very briefly. So the Employee Rights Act 2025, employers with over 250 staff will be legally required to implement a menopause action plan by 2027. And it's all of the guidelines have been published, and organisations of that size and above are now voluntarily getting this on board. For smaller organisations,
The 249.
Yes, exactly. It's like, why would you not do it? Because you're going to be losing top talent otherwise. Secondly, there is a moral duty of care to support people with any kind of like changes that are anything, that yeah. anything
yeah. whether it's related to menopause or not, right?
Like, yes, it's exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in my mind, it makes no difference whether it's 250 yeah. employees or over. So yes, that is something that organisations definitely should be exploring and getting on board. And then women who work for themselves. So this is where Hayley and I got together about a year ago to start talking about how women who work for themselves can continue to run their businesses, you know, when they hit all these potential challenges, which is why we created Menno Minds. Which
is exactly where you were.
Which is exactly where we yeah. both were. Yeah. So we've yeah. both had very different experiences with menopause. So when we talk about it with our groups, I really focus on the mental health side. Hayley talks a lot more about the physical changes and brain fog and stuff like that. I'm not going to speak on her behalf, but she, you know, we do have come from different angles because different experiences, because it's different for women and also the intersectionality around race and cultural background and ethnicity is so different as well.
Very different. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
So what we do in the training is we talk about different tools that women can use in the workplace, whether that's improving focus with time management stuff, making sure that their environment's set up for mitigating against extra aches and pains. We talk about the science behind breaks and why taking breaks is really important. We talk about self-compassion a bit more and mindfulness. We talk about imposter syndrome and different cognitive distortions that we may have around that, you know, like the catastrophizing and the I should be able to and all of that. And we talk about the power of practicing gratitude. Lots of different things like that we can use in the moment in the workplace just to help with our kind of general daily resilience, I think. To get us through the day, and loads of different resources that we provide as well.
Because a lot of those things that those tools that you're talking about that you teach, they can be done even if you're somebody who might be listening to this thinking, well, I'm in a workplace where, you know, I can't just take a break. The culture of their workplace, for example, is it's frowned upon that they leave their desk, or you know, the flexibility just isn't there. So they might be thinking, well, what am I, you know, I can't do any of that. But it sounds like the tools that you teach are things in the moment that can be done when no one actually even knows you're doing them.
Yeah, definitely. We do talk a lot about boundaries as well. So that's really key. Boundaries is so important to prevent burnout and, you know, all the cognitive the mental health and well-being decline. I think boundaries is really key for that. We do talk about a lot about that as well. And of course, there are lots of other things that we're gonna develop on, things like the different nutrition, sleep is really key, and there's only so much we can pack into a 2.5 hour training, of course. So the training is very specific tools for the workplace. So that's what we're trying to do. And they're all relevant for women, whether they're in big organisations or work for themselves. You know, it's all relevant stuff.
Yeah, because I think even if you're not in the workplace, you work for yourself. I work for myself. You work for yourself. We still have that duty of care to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We need tools to get us through our days and our weeks. And, you know, those weeks we feel we need to shut our business down because we can't. We're thinking, how can we, you know, I find things in the bin. So I think, well, I need to shut my business.
It's incredible, isn't it, how the brain does that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I need to go off and I always say this joke is that I want to go off and live in Thailand and open a dog rescue.
Oh, I'll do a cat rescue. Maybe in Greece or something like that.
We go together. Just get someone else to manage it. So But I think, what would you say to the person who's listening to this, whether they're in a workplace, whether they work for themselves, wherever their sort of work situation is or career, who's thinking, I can't cope at the moment. And I feel like I don't know myself and I just don't know what's happening to myself. What would you say to that woman?
So I think the first thing is, this might sound real cliche, but the first thing to do is just pause and breathe. You know, feel your feet on the ground, take a deep breath, just bring yourself back to the present moment, because it's all of those layers of catastrophizing that is causing that catastrophizing. It's like, you know, it's like that double kind of like shock that we give ourselves with all the thinking. Yeah. So that's the very first thing in the moment. Because often it is about managing the very moment before we can then move on to the next bit. If we're in that fight or flight, we can't do anything.
Can't move out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So engage the parasympathetic nervous system. Breathe, move, have a glass of water, look outside, go for a little walk, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So that's the very first thing. And then I think like one thing that we haven't mentioned is actually connection and community. So we mentioned about we're not the only one, but that can be quite an intellectual exercise, can't it, unless we're actually
witnessing
and being around other women experiencing this. And I think that's really key. If you work in an organization that's male dominant for whatever reason, it might just be the industry, can we create a community outside of work? Or, you know, are there a few women in the organization that we can get together and talk to? And I think this applies for
people. Yeah, you feel alone.
Yeah, exactly. I think this applies to all like menstrual health and hormonal health, really, in the workplace, like connecting.
Yeah.
Maybe if we work for ourselves, like you and I do, you know, there's co-working spaces, there's women's groups, talking to your friends, all that kind of stuff. It's so, so key. And I know for me, one of my worst, if you like, unhelpful coping mechanisms is isolation. I tend to think that I can do it. Yeah, I tend to think I can do it all on my own, or who wants to hear another moany story from me, you know, all that stuff. Like, oh, people are just getting on with their lives. They don't want to do this, that, and the other
stuff. Yeah.
So I think connection, talking, sharing really helps as well. It's immensely powerful. And then as we mentioned right at the beginning, if it's really troubling and really challenging and really profound and complex, and then the level up is getting professional support. So that could be counselling or coaching, or it could be going to speak to your GP and kind of starting there, and then see where that goes.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Like we said, it's one thing to say this is normal. You know, it's one thing to say this is normal. This is part of perimenopause. You know, I, for example, on this podcast teach what's happening physiologically, what estrogen is doing, what progesterone is doing, and why that changes things like cortisol, which then changes anxiety and things like that. So you have that information, which is great, it's empowering, but that we can't just chalk everything down to that. Like you said, if it becomes debilitating, if we're not leaving the house, if we're moving before it gets that bad, you know, if it's impacting relationships, you know, we hear a lot about that, divorce because of. And then when people come out the other side of this, they say, like, oh my goodness, what happened? What just happened there?
Yeah.
And so that's extreme. And potentially the person didn't get the help that they didn't even realize they needed because it was all just chalked up. To hormones.
Exactly. And we can't just, like, as you say, brush that off. It's just hormones, just get on with it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
there are tools, and I love what you teach. It's that compassion.
Yeah.
Stopping for a minute and taking a breath and then saying, right, okay, how do we move forward from here?
Yeah.
And having I think having the workplace in sort of on board, if that's at all possible, you know, if maybe by 2027 it sounds like that's gonna be it has to be.
Yes.
In place, but genuinely, I think in the absence of that, that's what I was going to say. See, I had a brain fog moment. Just wanted to say something important, but it just left, and now it's come back. Has it gone again? It's gone. No, what was I going to say? Boundaries.
Boundaries, yes.
In the workplace, you know, if we're in the absence of having a really understanding team, HR team, you know, manager, whoever, line manager, where can we set boundaries? Because potentially we're just overgiving. Mm-hmm. And I hear it a lot because I do some corporate work and I hear a lot of people say things like, well, you know, my boss will message me at 11:30 at night. Mm. And I see it in the morning and I get really anxious thinking, oh no, I didn't respond. And it's little things like that, being able to see that that was when it worked for your boss to send it to you.
Yeah.
And there is no expectation. Of course, there's no expectation. Even if they say my boss, you know, emailed me at 7 p.m, there still is no expectation, but we tend to put those expectations onto ourselves.
Yeah.
And I hear from people that work from home, but work for a company, that they say now, you know, I take less breaks. I don't even have a lunch break anymore because I feel guilty when I'm away from my desk. People might think I'm skiving off because, you know, and it's like when we actually work in the office, we probably have much better boundaries. So again, it's about thinking, well, how can I just say to my team, by the way, I'm now going for lunch. I will not be available between this time and this time. And just, yeah, I mean, we could obviously talk about this for hours, couldn't we?
Yeah. But I think it's such an important subject, though, because often when we set boundaries, it feels, or new boundaries, because we haven't been that person before, it feels really scary to us because it's new and we need to step into that unknown. And then that is linked to worrying how people will respond to us and what they will think about it. And a lot of that is our own cognitive or our own thinking around people aren't going to like me, or I can't do this because of X, Y, Z. So we can park that. We don't actually know. Yeah, we don't actually know how people are going to respond until we do it. And then if people do respond negatively, we have no power over that. That's not our area to worry about. Let them get on with it. It's their, you know, and we can see that in families when we start to set boundaries around family. They don't like it. Well, that's their problem. Yeah.
As long as you've been true, and again, this sounds like a cliche, but true to yourself and to your needs.
Yes.
As long as you've honoured your needs and you've expressed them.
Yes.
Which is something we've probably not done, but now we're choosing to because we've got this magnifying glass. It's a time in our life where we cannot mask anymore.
Yes.
Then as long as that's all been true and what you genuinely need, if that person cannot respond to it positively, that is genuinely not your problem.
Yeah. And it's communicating that as well. I think if we don't if we don't communicate what we need, I'm not going to be able to do calls at 10 p.m. at night anymore. Mm. You know, just by saying that, and then there could be quite a lot of respect that comes back from that.
Yeah, and also respect and inspiration, mm-hmm. where it might inspire somebody else.
Yeah,
to do the same, and then have that ripple effect.
Because I think like we're a generation of women at the moment going through all of this that are changing the face of it all. We're kind of like leading the way into how this should be in the workplace and in society. Mm. And so by making those boundary changes, you are a leader in how actually this should be. So it's like stepping into that role as best you can. And again, there's no pressure to do that. We don't want to add more pressure to ourselves. But yeah, we all kind of need to be leaders in how menopause is treated
and how we want it to be shaped.
Exactly.
It's for people after us.
Exactly. Yeah. We're kind of leading the way.
Oh, this has been brilliant. I feel like we could talk for so long.
Yeah, likewise.
Really, genuinely, how quickly the time.
Oh gosh, right.
I think we could definitely keep going, and I'm sure there's people listening thinking, oh, and what about this and what about that? Maybe we'll have you back on.
Yeah, I'd love to do more around compassion and mindfulness. That'd be amazing. And anxiety and stress response in particular.
I'd love to dive into that a bit more with you. Mm. Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. But cool. Before we go, is there anything else you want to say that we haven't talked about that you think people should know, and also let people know where they can find you, what you do with both Menno Minds, but also with your own business as well?
Okay, so the Menno Minds project is a fully funded opportunity for women to come and do a 2.5-hour session with Hayley and I to gain all of these tools around the workplace and mental health and perimenopause and menopause, connect with other women. It's online and it's fully funded. So, you know, just sign up, come and join us. That's amazing. We're doing monthly academy sessions as well. So, for example, I think it's next week or the one after, if you've done the course, you got an opportunity to come on to the monthly academy sessions. And the one I'm doing next week is actually mindfulness and self-compassion. So that's like a 50-minute session for everybody who's done the course. They can learn more about that. We've got one on post-menopause. We're going to have one on sleep, on all sorts of different subjects. And then my main kind of business, if you like, Minds at Work, is all about psychological safety in the workplace. So it's around mental health and well-being, compassionate leadership. I do loads of different accredited trainings and webinars and all sorts of things. So
that's for the work, that's for the manager, the work, the HR. Yeah,
yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I work with HR, people and culture, senior leaders, depending on the size of the organisation, to do wellbeing strategies and trainings and coaching and that kind of stuff.
So important. So Minds That Work would be very helpful for those looking to put their 2027 policies and
absolutely, yes,
together.
Yes.
Yeah, which hopefully they're wanting to start to do.
Yeah.
Wait until it's law. But I'm so excited to hear that that is going to be a legal requirement because, like I say, I do some corporate work myself. And when I first started this about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot more companies beginning to have their own menopause policies, but it's not a legal requirement.
No, and that's the thing with policies is they get written and they sit in a drawer and that's about it. So it needs to be more action led, which is what this new legislation is about.
Yeah. And then people like you going in a few times a year, if not more, monthly, to educate these leaders. Yeah. Brilliant. The work you're doing is so, so important. You are, obviously you've been through your own, you know, personal struggles and still it's not gone away, but you're part of that reshaping for the future.
I hope so.
I can tell you are.
So. Thank you, Francesca. Well, likewise with what you're doing, absolutely.
Thank you. It's just hard to believe it for yourself, isn't
it? I know. Imposter syndrome, bling, it's there.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming along, Victoria.
Thanks,
and we'll hopefully have you back again very soon to talk about compassion.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that wonderful episode with Victoria. And just to say that everything she has mentioned towards the end of the episode, I will link to in the show notes. So do make sure you check out the show notes to grab any links that might be relevant for you. All right. See you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.